in 2021, obviously there was this big eruption, a generational war talking about skinny being dead. And I think it was a very interesting time in terms of consumer mindset, where you might have a youth-driven consumer who's seeing a reinvention of their personal style by delving into baggier fits. But then you'll find a millennial mom that's just struggling to homeschool their kid and is working from home and is not in the mindset of trying on a new denim fit. So I think now that we've had space from that initial online dialogue, we're seeing that more people are getting comfortable trying on new fits. It's a really exciting time for retailers to also make that an inviting in-store experience.
That was Tommy Farner, director of Trend Curve Plus for WJSN, explaining just how the generational divide on the subject of skinny versus baggy jeans has evolved in recent months, and how retailers can make the most of the consumer's hunger to try new denim fits. Denim is a fashion category which is so intrinsically linked to lifestyle, both from a practicality point of view, but also in terms of cultural and social identity. People are passionate about their jeans, so when we see new trends shaking things up, the impact is significant. Denim had a very tough time during the pandemic. As we all went into that first lockdown, we quickly slid into slouch. The move to sweatpants was overnight, and many feared the denim category wouldn't recover, but recover it did, almost as soon as lockdowns lifted, in fact, and it's projected to continue growing, with the Allied Market Research projecting it to hit $88.1 billion by 2030. But the denim industry post-pandemic looks very different to the one we knew and loved. This is Create Tomorrow, the WJSN podcast, and I'm your host this week, Francesca Mustin, VP of Fashion Content here at WJSN. Today I'm joined by some of the denim heads from WJSN to talk everything from fit cycle data to TikTok and Y2K brand influencers to sustainability and new fabric innovation. But first, I wanted to start on a macro level and find out how denim compares to the rest of the apparel mix. And to do this, I turned to our Trend Curve Plus mastermind, Tommy Farner, who I first asked to explain just how our Trend Curve Plus platform works.
So, Trend Curve Plus is a predictive analytics model that utilizes WJSN's proprietary data sources. We like to refer to them as the five S's: shows, social, shelf, search, and sentiment. So the model combines this data set with machine learning algorithms and produces forecasts for trends up to 24 months out. And we've been able to prove the accuracy of these trends by 90%.
And so the actual output then of Trend Curve Plus, what specifically is that telling us? Like, what is that output?
So that output is a forecast of the mix share, which is the trend proportionate to the total product offering. We also make sure that we leverage our in-house fashion expertise. So we carefully review and contextualize these forecasts. So if there's any external factors that the model might not be picking up on, we're making sure that that is factored in as well when we make any insights.
Now, as a kind of self-confessed fashion geek, I absolutely love Trend Curve Plus and all the data that it kind of gives us. And Tommy, I know your background is as a denim merchandiser, right? So I'm assuming that you are also all over this data. Do you want to give us just like a few headlines of kind of what you're really seeing from Trend Curve Plus in terms of the denim category?
Yes, I think if you've ever been a denim merchant, your blood bleeds indigo. And denim is a very analytical category. So when we have something like a Trend Curve Plus model to help pull out the insights of what's happening across the markets, it is a very exciting tool to utilize. And what we're finding is that denim in both the US and UK markets has been in contraction. So we've seen that retailers have pulled back in terms of the total mix share of denim across retail assortments, because so much is happening under the surface in terms of the new fit cycle. So with women's, we've obviously been hearing a lot about the decline of skinny, and we're seeing wide leg and straight leg emerge to offset that. With men's, we're seeing a much more clear-cut story where straight leg is eclipsing the slim fit, which has been the leading fit for some time. I'd say overall, there are signs of stabilization. With the UK market, the trend curve category outlook for both menswear and womenswear jeans is classified as flat. So the decline is stopping. And then with the US, we're seeing a bit of a trail behind the UK market, where there still is slow decline projected, but we are seeing signs of the category stabilizing. What's also interesting is that with this new denim fit cycle, we're seeing increased level of stock at what we would deem the innovator segment at retail. So these are the retail assortments that are first to a trend that the mass market tends to take inspiration from. So as soon as the stock levels for a particular category starts to rise there, it's a pretty good indicator that we're poised for a turnaround.
I feel like we've been talking about this kind of decline of the skinny jean for so many years at this point. And I know that it's often over-sensationalized because it's a huge deal, right? But actually, when we're starting to kind of look at the data, it's been just happening at such a slow pace for so long. I'd just love to get your perspective, Tommy, on kind of, you know, where are we really at in this kind of the demise of the skinny?
Well, one of the things that we really like to dissect with the trend curve is the disproportionate nature of how things show up online, or more specifically in social platforms, as opposed to how they show up in the market. So in 2021, obviously there was this big eruption, a generational war talking about skinny being dead. And I think it was a very interesting time in terms of consumer mindset, where you might have a youth-driven consumer who's seeing a reinvention of their personal style by delving into baggier fits. But then you'll find a millennial mom that's just struggling to homeschool their kid and is working from home and is not in the mindset of trying on a new denim fit. So I think now that we've had space from that initial online dialogue, we're seeing that more people are getting comfortable trying on new fits. It's a really exciting time for retailers to also make that an inviting in-store experience. But yes, it has been a very slow motion transition as opposed to that TikTok quick edit. And I think you can't talk about liquidation of a denim fit without talking about how much inventory is attached to each individual fit. And at its peak, women's skinny jeans were 50% of all of women's jeans assortments. So it's going to take multiple seasons, and in some cases years, for certain mass retailers to optimize their fit assortment to catch up with consumer tastes.
Right, exactly. And we kind of can't really overstate how important that is, because for any one style to be at 50% of that category is just enormous. So there's a lot of money tied up in that one style, which of course is for our industry listeners why this is such a kind of key subject. But then, as you rightly say, for consumers as well, this is a very touchy subject. I'm Francesca Mustan, and you're listening to Create Tomorrow from WGSN, and we're talking all things denim. Next up, I wanted to bring WGSN senior denim strategist Susie Draffen to talk about the very welcome return of festivals over the past few months and what denim trends she's picked up on. Susie, you have been analysing all of our festival coverage. What is your perspective on the fit cycle, and kind of can you give us your take on what you see happening?
Well, I think the shift is driven by the popularity of these 90s and noughties fit, which are really coming back and have been for kind of several seasons, which is really driven by the overarching trend for nostalgia, especially for the youth market. But it's also about consumers wanting to return to denim, but not yet willing to give up that kind of comfort of loungewear that they enjoyed kind of so much during the pandemic. And roomier fits, kind of sizing up to roomier fits, kind of accounts for that level of comfort. And what's interesting, kind of to build on what Tommy was saying, that although the skinny and the slim fit are on the decline, it's still the biggest amount of merchandising mix for one style. And it's particularly key for certain demographics, including the plus size market. So previously, we would see in terms of denim trends, one silhouette would really dominate at a time, like the skinny. But now consumers are more open to experimentation, thanks to the speeding up of trends, thanks to social media, to TikTok. Because consumers are more open to experimentation, it leaves them more open to experimenting with different fits, which then will do different jobs in people's wardrobes. So it's more about rebalancing the merchandising mix to reflect that. So I think the skinny is still, it's a core style now. There's still a place for it, but it's just not the juggernaut that it used to be. And like you mentioned, Francesca, it's like a lot of these headlines about, you know, the skinny is dead are quite sensationalist.
And so that's given us a good idea of different silhouettes, but in terms of like the trends that you've been sort of tracking from a youth and denim perspective, could you give us some insights on what some of those trends are?
Well, I mean, like I said, naughty nostalgia is the key driver for youth and denim trends at the moment. And it's really manifesting in these looser baggy fits, which are popularised by Gen Z. But it's also translating into the men's and women's wear markets, which is really interesting to see it kind of cross over. So at Coachella this year, the biggest trend overall was Y2K style, from these low-rise baggy jeans to cargo pants to denim matching sets, so little bralettes and corset tops, which is something that we've been tracking, kind of paired with denim mini skirts. So really anything kind of, you know, naughty style. This return to kind of sexy dressed up denim as well, we were starting to see kind of come through at street level. But what's interesting about the low rise is it's a really polarizing trend. So a lot of people are like, no, remember it from first time around. I mean, if you're of a certain age, remember it from the first time around. We get a shudder at the thought of it. So it is really a youth market led trend, the low rise, although we are starting to see higher end luxury women's wear designers experimenting with it. Nelly Lotan and Stella McCartney both showed low rises in the recent pre-summer 23 catwalk shows. And we've included that in our key items roundup from those shows, which is available on the site. But what was interesting is they showed how you can make that style work for an older customer. They kind of elevated it by putting it on easier fits, like a straight leg, and paired it with bodysuits or tucked in shirts to kind of dress it up a little bit. But it really kind of elevated it and contemporized it in a non-youth way.
Right. And I think whenever we see a trend, which is, as you said, these sort of juggernaut trends, they do tend to be cross-generational. And so being able to sort of adapt trends and make them more versatile for a wider demographic of people is always kind of key to getting some real success out of those.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I was like, oh, no, no way. But then I saw those catwalk images and I was like, huh, maybe. Yeah.
This is Create Tomorrow, the WGSN podcast. Continuing our conversation on denim trends in fashion, I wanted to ask Susie about the rise of the early noughties indie sleaze trend and where its origins have emerged from. So talking back to, you mentioned, like, if you remember it the first time round, could you give us like a little bit of kind of where we're seeing that like early noughties sort of indie sleaze trend coming from and a bit of background on that?
Okay, so indie sleaze is something that is kind of an Instagram account that launched at the start of this year, and it quickly went viral, and it really documents the kind of party scene largely from sort of 2007 to 2014-ish. And within that encompasses lots of different kind of subgenres.
I think this is very kind of personal to Susie and I, because during this period, she and I were very much like out on the trend tracking scene, right?
We were at festivals, we were taking those photos.
Yeah, particularly you were at a lot of festivals, at a lot of clubs, a lot of parties, but also Susie and I traveled around the world together quite a lot during that period.
Our glory years.
Right, exactly. Taking pictures of low-rise jeans and zooming on people's back pockets. So we do have some very first-hand experience of that period.
For sure, yeah, those nights in Camden. So what it touches on within this kind of, you know, under the banner of indie sleaze, it mixes new rave with emo, with sort of hipster indie style, with twee looks, with like pastel grunge. So it's a real, it's not one particular look, it's an amalgamation of the looks during that time. And this is something that you know, because it's so buzzed about it at the moment, that we've been tracking and keeping an eye on. And although we're not really seeing it manifest too much right now in terms of fashion, it is coming through at a more pop cultural level, through media. Cobra Snake, who was one of the kind of main party photographers from that time, just published a book of his pictures from that era through Rizzoli. There's a bunch of TV projects in development sort of that are going to document that era of the noughties. There's a documentary called Meet Me in the Bathroom that's coming out that looks at the New York scene in the early noughties and focuses on brands like The Strokes and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. And recently there was a festival in LA called Just Like Heaven, which had a lineup that was like straight out of 2008. So this kind of overwhelming mood for nostalgia is kind of rolling through the noughties, kind of barreling through the noughties, and we're kind of shifting slowly into this kind of the latter part of the early 2000s and moving into sort of like the 2010s. And what's most interesting about that period is it's the period when really the skinny was king, when it formed the kind of the bedrock of everybody, of those kind of indie hipster skinny looks, which, you know, is also a bit problematic because they're kind of like not very size inclusive looks. But yeah, it's just interesting. If we do kind of return to that style, I think that we could also see a return to the skinny being a kind of key silhouette much faster than we possibly anticipated.
What I think is so fascinating about the indie sleaze trend is you've got the different generations looking at it from different vantage points. So you have those that are nostalgic of those times, and then you've got these young folks that were sort of robbed of their party years in during the pandemic. So they saw this as, you know, kind of the decade before them that really got to go out there and create a scene. And I think that this idea of a scene is a really interesting one to track. Like, what are these, you know, the 20 somethings that have been, you know, have had to go through college without going to a party, or, you know, there's this idea of what was that like if you didn't have this disruption, and how that they're taking inspiration from that to kind of venture off on this post-pandemic world.
I mean, I think what's interesting as well is that it's, at the moment we're trying to figure out, is this just millennials, older millennials being nostalgic for their youth, or is it actually, are Gen Z fueling this? And I think it's like a mixture of both, because I think obviously millennials are feeling nostalgic, but also Gen Z, like you mentioned, Tommy, they missed out on so much during the pandemic. But also the thing that kind of attracts them to this era in particular, I think, is that it was a time really before smartphones were kind of widely available or used. It was a time before kind of like social media forced you to have like a personal brand, when, you know, there's people with cameras everywhere taking pictures of everything that you did. So, you know, there's this feeling of like it was a time that was a little bit dirtier, a bit sleazier, when people could kind of let loose, have a good time, and not have to worry too much about someone documenting it and it kind of, you know, spoiling your job prospects in the future because somebody posted an image of you that was, you know,
that was obviously never us, Susie.
Never us.
Okay, Tommy, I'd just like to, before we move on, because we also have Nicole on the call, who's our textile expert, and I would love to hear some of the stuff that Nicole has to say. But before we move on to that, Tommy, could you just give us a little bit of a data perspective on this this kind of Y2K and the return to those noughties look, but in particular that low rise, because as Susie said, it can be kind of quite generationally divisive. So what are we seeing in terms of rises within our Trend Curve Plus forecasts?
Right. So yeah, as Y2K fashion historians, we can all say that it is true to the era that this would mean that low rise is coming back. If you look at what was happening amongst denim assortments in the marketplace, for many years, assortments were really mixing out of low-rise jeans. So, and then we had a really, really important inflection point last year where high-rise overtook mid-rise in terms of the prominent jean, the prominent rise in terms of mix share. So right now we're at this place where probably high rise is reaching a saturation point. Low rise was so impactful when it showed up on the recent catwalks because we haven't seen it for so long. What's interesting, it only currently makes up about 2% of denim choices in the UK and 3% in the US. But we are already picking up in the UK that there is a slow rise in low rise product options. So we're starting to see where it really has been a steep decline for the past 5 years. And then in the US, it's flattening out. In the UK, it already started to pick up. And as I mentioned in the beginning of the call, how we're seeing an increase in stock levels for denim at innovator segments, within the innovator segment, we're seeing low rise. That's the place it's registering. So it is, you know, coming from the, you know, the up-leveling of Diesel as a luxury brand. We saw it from Y Project. So we saw it from Alex on the runways. So I think that we're seeing it from like a very luxury designer place. So it'll be interesting to see how that then translates to more of a mass commercial moment. And I think it probably will be the youth market that picks up on it first.
You're listening to Create Tomorrow from WJSN. The pandemic played a huge role in shaping fashion trends over the past few years, particularly around the idea of comfort. I wanted to understand how this was playing into denim trends. In order to do that, I spoke to WJSN fabric and sourcing strategist Nicole Ajumel about what she'd seen recently at both Denim PV and at Kingpins. Do you want to give us a bit of a background of kind of some of the ways that you were seeing comfort coming through from a materials and a fibre perspective?
Yeah, sure. So basically, with comfort in denim, you know, the kind of go-to is to mix the fibres with elastane. But the problem is that elastane is a synthetic fibre. And as we have a huge focus on sustainability at the moment within the industry, you know, this doesn't really kind of fit into the longevity or the recyclability of the product. So the skinny jean has quite a high content of elastane. And for us to be able to move forward within in the fashion industry, in sustainability, we really need to have a circular economy. So circularity is really about reducing the waste to a minimum and reusing as much of the discarded item as possible, so the life cycle of the product is ended. And with the high percentage of elastane in fabrics, it means that it can't be recycled.
And this is basically because of the mix of those two fabrics. So for any of our listeners who maybe are not aware, this is, it's one of the real problems with textile recycling generally, is that if you have a blend of two different fibres, that can be really problematic, right? And you have to resort to things like chemical recycling, which is much more complex. So from a sort of a best practice point of view, we're looking at monomateriality, right? Which is a single fibre, namely cotton, right?
Exactly. So there are innovations happening within the industry, like with the skinny jean. Because, you know, it's still something that is going to be about, as we've discussed. And there's a company called Maritus Denim, and they've got this technology called Cycle FX. And basically, it's a recyclable, high elastic jean. And that's through innovation through their fibre spinning, weaving and finishing techniques, and has like a great recovery performance. But as you said, the ideal solution is to have a mono material design. So other ways that we can gain comfort in our fabrics and in our jeans is looking at things like weave constructions. And at Denim PV, we saw knitted constructions as well for like a natural stretch, low impact finishing techniques, high twist yarns, and then, as you said, natural fiber choices. So thinking about fibres of cotton, hemp and linen, And all of these fibres have great benefits of breathability, durability and thermoregulating as well, which kind of all add to the comfort.
And this these kind of innovations in weave are particularly close to your heart, right, Nicole, because you are a weaver.
Yes, yeah. So it's super nice for me because, you know, obviously the craft side of denim is very important. And for me personally, like, the rigid denim shows the characteristics of the yarn in the best possible way. So, and this is why a lot of people buy vintage jeans as well, because they want to invest in a fabric that's going to last, that kind of keeps its shape. And, you know, we can see how the jeans have worn, where the indigo's kind of been worn out, like with the whiskers, or, you know, if they're super old, then maybe where tools have been put in the pockets and stuff like that. And that's kind of what all the denim heads really look for.
For any of our listeners who aren't aware, as Nicole says, like, sustainability is so critical to the denim industry, because for denim in particular, it is actually like one of the most unsustainable categories within apparel. And that's largely down to things like water use, because it has incredibly high water use, not only for the growing of cotton, but also for the amount of laundering involved in producing denim. But also there's a lot of issues around toxicity with the dyes and everything as well. And certainly our retail team are constantly bringing back innovations from shop floors all around the world, where we're seeing retailers and brands really responding to this with lots and lots of different innovations. Nicole, did you have any other sort of innovations of anyone that you wanted to share that you're finding exciting at the moment?
I think especially at Kingpins, and you'll see it in our WGSM report as well, there was increase of natural dyeing techniques. So cone denim, they were using these beautiful earth tones of madder root, logwood, lemon and marigold, which kind of achieves like this amazing tie-dye results and kind of embraces the irregularities on the surface. And then also another trend would be jacquards, because I think really that's the easiest way to create an interesting textural surface. And I mean, obviously being a weaver myself, I'm definitely attracted to colour and texture. And with jacquard, the easiest way to create an interesting textural surface will be to add like height and volume with weft floating constructions. And in our denim PV report, there's we've included a deconstructed trend which highlight all of those fabrics. And it's great because it brings like a playful element to denim, and it's a chance to express individuality, which again leads back to the craftsmanship of denim, which is something that I think everyone's kind of looking for now and what we want to invest in.
So while Tommy and I are geeking out over the data, Nicole is geeking out over the cut float wefts and the woven jacquards. Amazing. Okay, so Susie, I'd also just love to get your perspective as well on sustainability. Are there any sort of innovations which have caught your eye?
Sure. I mean, I think, and this is largely off the back of Nicole's the reports that she did for Kingpins and for Denim PV. But two kind of examples that came to mind that we included in our recent spring summer 24 forecast, Creative Confidence, is these zero waste design solutions. So they're being developed. Basically, a zero waste solution is looking at pattern making and garment construction as a way to create no waste from the outset of the design process, the design and production process. So cone denim, Endrime and Genealogia recently debuted a zero waste pattern for a jean and a trucker jacket at Kingpins. And Ghani similarly partnered with another Danish label called Stem on a circular collection using a zero waste production technique, which means the entire fabric was used and nothing lost during the cutting and sewing process. So I think, although this is like, these are like kind of small capsules at the moment, but I think it's motivating to see brands and designers tackling the waste problem from the outset of the design process rather than as, you know, an afterthought. So yeah, these are obviously like small. It'll be interesting to see if anybody can scale those ideas, but I think the fact that people are looking at innovative solutions from the outset, I think is really you know, the direction that we want to be going in.
Thank you so much to Tommy Farner, Susie Draffen and Nicole Adjemal for taking part in today's episode. And I'd also like to thank you for listening. If you're a WGSN subscriber, you'll find reports covering much of what we've talked about today and tons more on our site. If you want to find out how to subscribe, head over to wgsn.com to discover how you can get access to our service. We're constantly publishing new content focusing on how we can design a brighter, better future for our industries. And that's across food and drink, interiors, beauty, fashion, and also consumer tech. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, then please follow this show, which is available on all major podcast platforms. And if you really like what you've heard, then please leave us a rating and review on iTunes. It really helps us to get the word out there. Thanks again to our guests. And I'd also like to thank our podcast producers, Roland Bodenham and Bethan Ryder. Thank you again for listening, and we'll see you next time.